Welcome back, y'all. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Kristen Casey.
I'm licensed psychologist, Dr. Jessica Rapin.
What up? I'm licensed psychologist, Dr. Jang.
Today, we're talking all about therapy. First therapy appointments, what therapy is like, starting therapy for the first time. I know whenever we say that out loud, I know that I could remember a couple of memories of being either a therapist or a client first time. Really excited. So settle in, take a seat, and welcome to group therapy. One thing to note is KBI ditched us again. Maybe she's in her own therapy appointment, hopefully. I was going to say she needs it, but she would probably agree with me that she does. To start us off, I have a question for both of you. So if you remember the first time that you went to therapy as a client, what was it like? Or if you don't feel comfortable sharing, what was it like as your first therapy client or therapy session as a therapist? Any thoughts if you could remember?
No, if I remember like my first session ever. I remember like the general theme of being in therapy at 15, and it was awkward and I felt uncomfortable and I didn't really like my therapist. I do the one memory, this shows how young I was. The one memory I remember is paying the copay and it was $20. And I was like, oh my gosh, she makes like $20 an hour. Like that's a lot of money. But literally that's the only thing I remember about my first therapy session. But I don't remember the specifics. What about you all?
Yeah, I remember both like super vividly. It's similar feelings of like anxiety. Mm-hmm. Anticipation, unknown, uncertainty, the feelings I had were so paralleled in both as a client, also like super young. It was either 13 or 14. I don't know. Like I was giving like one word answers, like classic.
You were
right?
One of those.
Like so scared and terrified of like not expanding on anything and being like, yes, no, like, but, and then as a therapist, I just remember being like, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like my way through an entire session with very little to add because of pure anxiety and stress.
So relatable. Oh my gosh. I don't remember my first therapy experience as a client. I do remember my first like therapist. I don't remember the first session. I just remember being scared shitless. I was just like, right. I don't know what we're going to talk about. I don't know if this therapist is going to get me, you know? Mm. I echo both of you, just felt like anxious and kind of like, I don't know. Is this going to work? You know, I kind of had suspicions that it might not, or I was skeptical. And then as a therapist, I don't remember my first client, but I do remember my first year as a therapist. And wow, I was like hardcore struggling. I would come home every day and like read CBT worksheets and stuff. I'm like, I gotta know this stuff. I gotta get this down. And now like, we don't even look at worksheets, you know? But I just remember feeling very anxious on both ends.
I so relate to that, K-10, like having the CBT manual and like being like, oh, day one, we're going to do a thought record. Like, I don't remember the last time I did a thought record.
No, it's so true. And as I was, reading the questions that we had today to guide our discussion, I noticed a lot of the same themes of like, people were a little anxious or they didn't know what to expect, mm-hmm. you know, and it was kind of hard to know, like, how do I even find the right therapist? So we're going to talk all about it today. Mm-hmm. But let's start with, what do you think some misconceptions about therapy? What comes to mind? Or maybe why people are hesitant to seek out therapy or a therapist?
I think it's just a really vulnerable process. And I don't think that's a misconception. Mm-hmm. I think that is the reality of it. I think it feels deeper and different than it does meeting with, maybe someone providing medication or maybe a doctor or any other type of professional, at least I've ever seen, speaking mm-hmm. from the client side. It's way more personal. It's someone who's interested in your narrative and the depth at which you're ready to share, which again, I think that might fall into the misconception is that, you know, a therapist is going to jump right in and be like, tell me your trauma off day one. Mm-hmm. It's like a therapy is really effective when we can build a relationship based on trust and understanding mm-hmm. each other. And that's, you know, the greatest predictor of success in therapy is that we have a good therapeutic relationship. But mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are afraid of that. And why wouldn't you be? Mm-hmm. I don't want to walk in a place and sit down and have someone be like, tell me, you know, what's going to make you cry right now?
Like this.
Really stressful.
Yeah. I think a big misconception is like therapy is for like, quote unquote, crazy people, or you have to be like really sick. And so I think a lot of people then are hesitant to reach out to start therapy because they don't, because there's stigma. They don't want to be labeled. I also think another big misconception is like therapy is just talking to a friend, like talking to a friend. So they're like, why do I need to seek therapy? Like I can vent to my friends about this. And I think both of those misconceptions probably, in addition to the vulnerability piece that you just talked about, Justin, prevent people from maybe seeking out therapy at a time that would be appropriate to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I echo everything that y'all said. I think that it's scary to know that somebody's really going to see you, hopefully, you know, because there's therapists out there who, you know, they're unethical people in every field. But I do think it's scary to like actually go in and this person's actually going to listen to me. And what am I going to do with that? How am I going to feel about that? I remember just feeling very scared too when I was younger going to therapy, thinking like, what if they validate me? And then it's like, then what? Then it's just like for some people, it's a foreign experience, you know, it's like to have that space to explore. So I really do think it's vulnerable. And I think a lot of people feel raw, you know? Mm-hmm. And just to add to what you said, I think that every therapist has a different theoretical orientation, which, you know, we might talk about. So every therapist might present something completely differently in terms of the therapeutic style and what to expect in therapy. So I do think it is hard to imagine what it might be like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to normalize a bit of that, the reason why it feels so different, not only because every therapist has a legit different personality and are different humans from different cultural backgrounds and all those factors, but that theoretical orientation matters a lot because that's the roadmap your therapist is going to use to help you. And not only conceptualize your narrative, your cultural background, all these, you know, great factors that make the unique person that you are, but also to get at the core of what some of the problems, symptoms that you're experiencing are. So, you know, some therapists are really flexible. Some are more rigid. Some already have the plan. Some are like, the plan is going to form as we go. But the reason we all use a theoretical orientation, again, is it's the roadmap of like, oh, if someone presents with OCD generally, what are some ways my orientation helps to kind of combat or understand that difficulty or problem, just as an example? But that is why you get such wide differing, you know, experiences within psychotherapy is personality, culture, perspective, and this map that your therapist is going to use.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Justin, I think that leads into a question a lot of people ask when like, I don't know, searching for a therapist, like, how do I know if this person is going to be the right fit for me? How do I know if they are even skilled in what I need? Like, I maybe, you know, now with social media, people have probably heard of like DBT, EMDR, CBT, but like, how do I know which one is right for me? And I think these are all really good questions, and it makes sense that people have them. So I guess like just opening that conversation up, you know, what would you all say to somebody trying to figure out first how to find a therapist? Oh, how do they know if they're right for them? All of those big things. Because that all happens before ever stepping foot in a therapy office or a virtual session.
Yeah. There's so many factors that I think go into it. And I think the first thing that I think of is, are you using insurance or are you going private pay, right? Like financially, let's get it out of the way. Like, what do we have? What do we have to work with there? Because I think when you're trying to find a therapist through your insurance versus private practice, those searches look very different. You know, it's just a very different process. But in terms of just say that's out of the way, I think really finding a therapist that you feel that you might be able to open up to. And so I always tell my clients or my friends, I'll say, think about the people that you can talk to very easily. Like maybe what do they look like? What do they sound like? What's their approach? You know, and obviously a therapist isn't a friend, but I think it's a good start to figure out, okay, on the spectrum of people out there, who do I feel like I would align with or who I'd feel comfortable with? So I always like for people to do like a little bit of a deep dive there to start at least. What about y'all?
I love that because it's getting real interpersonal and I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's a great place to start. This is where counter to what I just said in some ways, I don't think theoretical orientation is the most important. Mm-hmm. I think these interpersonal factors are far more important. And if you're going to get in the weeds of getting curious about, it's not in self-diagnosis, but what is it that I believe I'm struggling with? And again, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you have curiosity of like, I think I might have ADHD. I think I might have generalized anxiety disorder. I'm struggling with grief here or trauma. You know, I think staying curious to what it could be. But if you have it, some general ideas, you will do best finding a therapist who has treated that often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't go as far to say that they have to have an expertise or specialty. They may, but mm-hmm. I would want to know, and I advise everyone in my life, ask them specifically, how often do you treat someone with depression? How often do you treat someone with PTSD or CPTSD or whatever it might be? That is going to illuminate a lot. If they're like, well, you know, it's not something that's likely not going to be a great fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are so many therapists out there who be like, oh, yes, I have lots of clients on my caseload right now with depression. I feel very confident in treating it, something I have a lot of training and experience with. That's a great sign. Mm-hmm. Again, outside the interpersonal factors, which you can test the waters on, you can do consultation calls. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be some unknown. I don't think mm-hmm. you can really get to the bottom of interpersonally how we click until you're in those first sessions.
Yeah. I agree with everything that you all have said. I say a lot of the same things when I'm talking to people about finding a therapist. I usually encourage them, you know, exactly like you said, Justin, you know, finding somebody that has treated or specializes in, depending. And I think specializes in for like things like OCD, eating disorders, sure. like yeah. those versus like anxiety, depression. Most of us are trained, and things like that. And then, you know, first step, looking at their website, because you can tell a lot by somebody's website. Like, do I even feel like with how they present themselves, this would be a good fit? The consultation mm-hmm. calls. And I guess we kind of skipped over like how to even find a therapist, like social yeah. media. Now a lot of people do, mm-hmm. I know Psychology Today, but there's so many other search engines. So my issue with insurance, I know K10, you brought this up. Like, yes, if you're using insurance, it's important to find a therapist that uses your insurance. You can go through your insurance. However, in my experience, they don't specifically know like what the therapist does, treats, mm-hmm. et cetera. So like right, I'm a yeah. psychologist that is insured on a ton of insurance panels because I work for a hospital system. We'll have people call just like randomly asking for like therapy or an assessment. And it's like, that's not how it works. So it could be a good starting point, but like doing your own research. I mean, employee assistance programs, college counseling centers, yep. and some of these like college counseling centers, you might be limited. You don't have the luxury mm-hmm. of like always looking at their website, seeing if it's a good fit. But I think everything we've talked about, you know, are you using insurance, you know, interpersonal factors, do they specialize? And then like logistically trying to figure out how to find a therapist. Cause I don't know about you. I think we all take that for granted. Cause like we're in the field.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, obviously mm-hmm. like you just go on Psychology Today, but a lot of people are like, where do I even start?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think when I'm thinking back and I'm thinking of like logistics, the consultation calls, Justin, that you brought up, mm-hmm. I remember telling some of my friends, I'm like, okay, commit to booking 3 consultation calls. If you could get them all in the same week, that's ideal. Just do an experiment and whoever you vibe with the most,
yeah.
lean in to that and then make sure, like Jess is saying, like training, you know, and all the other logistical things, like, can they actually treat me? Do they treat people mm-hmm. who look like me? That's another thing. I know for some people, it's really important to find a therapist who is culturally aware of certain things, especially if I think of the LGBTQ community as well. Sometimes you want a provider who's also part of the community, sometimes not, just mm-hmm. depends. So that's important to look for as well. And then I think there's a lot at least right now, when I'm thinking in 2024, there's a lot of sensitive topics for people who are exploring like gender or certain things. They feel scared, you know, to see a therapist, and I don't know what their views are, you know? So to Jess's point, I do think doing some homework and researching is really helpful, because then you feel comfortable, you know? And if you feel comfortable, then it gets a little easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also wanted to add and validate that if you're going through a system, you might have less choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you're using the, like Jess had mentioned, using the University Counseling Center, you're going through the VA, you're calling the insurance company directly. So like that is a factor. Like if you're going through, or if you're doing community mental health, you just might have far less say and option. Obviously it's really nice, you know, when you have the privilege to select, meaning that you can go to psychologytoday.com. People have short videos, people have photos up, they can even sometimes show you the office space, and they do write a fair amount. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us have our own personal websites where we write even more. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you'll get lucky in some ways, although I know some people don't like it, so valid to that, that they might have their own social media, for me, and I think it's great. Again, if you have the perspective that you don't like it, it's fine. I've heard people say, I don't want my therapist to be on social media, which again, individual differences. The reason I think it's great is you get to collect so much more data on your potential therapist. Mm-hmm. Like when I pick up clients, like this is me selling it for a hot second. Rarely, if ever, is it a bad match, because the client, they know in quotes me, at least I put out content every day that represents me, sides of myself, thoughts I have, whatever. So it's nice when you can collect a lot of information on a potential therapist. And yet, as I said at the start of this, I validate that for some people, you might have less choice, which we'll get into the nuance of how do you know if you should switch? How do you know if you should work the system in any way to get, again, a better therapeutic fit?
Yeah. Totally.
And to add a little bit on that, because I know we've talked about consultation calls, which I always encourage. And in my experience, like if you are going with a therapist that works in a system of some sort, they don't offer that. Like I don't offer consultation calls because I work in a hospital system.
Right.
That does not necessarily mean it won't be a good fit or it's bad in any way, but that is definitely much more of a private practice thing. So you wouldn't necessarily have the luxury to, I don't know more about your therapist. So if you are using insurance or going through community mental health, college counseling, some type of system, I would say, and your choice is limited, as long as it's someone that has experience in treating what you are presenting for, that would be my number one piece of advice there. And then obviously you can figure out if you're a good fit, which kind of goes into whether it's being the 15-minute consultation call or first session. Like I get this a lot on social media, so I'm sure you all do too. Like what questions do I ask my therapist? Like how can I figure out if they are a good fit for me? Do you all have any go-to questions you encourage people to ask?
I'm trying to think of the different settings that I've worked in too, to have like a more generalized answer. Cause at the VA, I would have had a different response because I worked at the VA for a while. So it's like a lot of times when I work with veterans, they'll ask, are you a veteran? And I'll say no, because I'm not. And then they'll ask, do you know anybody who's a veteran? Like just to kind of see if I know the culture and stuff like that. And then I'll explain my expertise. But in private practice, I always encourage them to ask whatever's on their mind. And I'm like, if it's way too personal and it's not applicable, I'll just say pass. But nothing's really off the table for me, because I noticed that clients don't really ask like super personal questions. They mostly want to know, do you feel confident in treating me? You know, have you seen this before? Do you feel comfortable working with somebody like me? I think those are the things that people don't really want to ask, but they have it in their mind. So if you feel comfortable, that's great. I usually reserve those for the consultation call. I'll say, what questions do you have for me? And I'll just like wait so that they have time to answer. But I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not. I don't think there's anything that's like totally off the table unless it's like a super inappropriate question that's like personal or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think anything is really. And I've had some pretty personal questions get asked. And I think you get a feel for like, you know, maybe where those limits are for your individual therapist that you might be talking to. And there's no mm-hmm. right or wrong there. This is a gray zone that each person navigates. But no, I would encourage you, because in my mind, I'm like, there's a 99% chance that your question isn't something a therapist would bat an eye to.
Right.
Like, yeah. whatever it is you're thinking of. I will say, in a consultation call, it's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
And the reason why, mine are so short, is it starts turning into therapy real quick, mm-hmm. as you can imagine. So like mine are 10 minutes.
It's, yeah.
I literally ask, you know, one question: what are you hoping to get out of therapy, or why are you seeking therapy? And then I'm like, happy to answer any questions you have. But it is short. It's fast. Sometimes I go 15 minutes, fine. Mm-hmm. But you can also ask these in a first session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even if your therapist is going to do a biopsychosocial, whatever, saying at the top of a session, like, you know, I have some questions for you that I'd like to ask, is, should I ask them now? Should we wait till the end? Get your questions asked,
mm-hmm. yeah.
whatever it is. But I do think, besides asking questions, the nuance of, do you feel seen and heard and valued, might be more important than whatever question. In you asking the question, that's going to illuminate some of this. Mm-hmm. But when you feel like your therapist is locked in, they're listening, they're hearing you, they're trying their best to understand you, people stick around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's usually the best, you know, getting symptom relief off of one session sometimes, but like, I wouldn't put that expectation out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with everything you all are saying. And, you know, I think one of the biggest questions is what Justin already brought up, like, how comfortable are you treating or mm-hmm. whatever I'm presenting with? I think if you hold marginalized status, it's absolutely mm-hmm. appropriate to yeah. ask your therapist. I know this has been like a big debate on social media here recently about, like, you know, therapists disclosing their political beliefs. But I am of the perspective, if it's very important for you as the client to know that your therapist holds certain political beliefs or certain ideologies or certain outlooks, et cetera, ask. And if they're not comfortable answering, that could be an answer for you. Like, the therapist might not be comfortable answering, but, you know, it's, everybody that listens to the podcast knows I work with LGBTQ plus youth. If you look at my social media, you will know that I post about it all the time. And it's important for me to, for my clients that are LGBTQ plus, to know that I am in their corner. And not only advocate for them in the therapy room, but also outside. So I do want to give permission to anybody that holds any type of marginalized status or wants a therapist that aligns with your beliefs. Not saying you have to either, because I've definitely had clients that I know we have very different beliefs and we've worked wonderful together. But as the client, if that's important to you, I do want to give you permission to ask that, because I think that goes into feeling safe. We already talked about mm-hmm. vulnerability. Like, how can you be vulnerable with somebody that you're sitting there like, okay, when we leave this therapy office, are they like advocating for me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I think that's so important. I even think too, on the other end of that, I've also had clients who have told me, like, I actually need somebody who is completely different from me. I'm thinking about sexuality stuff, because I don't want your experience to color mine. I think that's kind of like a concern for some clients. Like, I want to be able to have center stage. And I'm like, this is totally your session. It's not about me. But it's important for you to know, like, where I'm coming from, you know, if mm-hmm. that's something that you're looking for or something like that. But just to echo, I don't think there's anything off the table if you hold marginalized status. In fact, I encourage my clients to talk to me about these things. I'm like, hey, this mm-hmm. happened in your state. Do you want to spend mm-hmm. some time talking about it if you feel comfortable, if it's relevant, obviously, to their goals? Just because I, you know, you want to see them and you want them to be seen and heard and all that.
Yeah. Just to, again, echo that part of, like, whether there someone like compliments you or is the same as you is such an individual choice.
It is.
I agree. Like, I've had people who wanted to know my religious beliefs because they wanted to make sure I was outside of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the interesting nuance here. I think political, not to say that I get asked that often, I can only think of a couple times I ever was, but political, usually people probably lean towards a, they would like a match or have it not be discussed. But there's a lot of individual differences that exist of why someone wants someone similar within their culture or maybe outside. And whatever feels right for you, you're fully entitled to ask. Yeah. And if your therapist dodged that question, you got your answer. I think that's important for you to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just thinking of times that, like, I've had, like, teenage boys be like, no, I want a female therapist because I don't want another, like, man telling me the same thing, or, like, racial ethnicity differences and things like that. But just, like, Justin, you just said, you know, whatever you want. And that's part of kind of exploring, like, what kind of therapist do I want? Like, do I want somebody way older than me? That would be more of, like, a... mother, father, grandparent figure. Do I want someone similar to my age, assuming you're not like a minor, because that would be weird, or good for the minor therapist, I guess, if you went through all that schooling. Do I want somebody that looks like me? So these are all things to think about when you're, you know, if you have the privilege of choosing your therapist, when it comes to finding a therapist. Like, if I think about sitting across from somebody and who, what is the type of person I would be most comfortable with? Not just personality wise, like, you know, other characteristics. And that is okay to have preferences.
It is. I keep thinking about how there's so many different types of therapists, so many different types of modalities, so many different types of, like, ways to show up. And it's on the client end, I'd imagine it being confusing too, to, like, start this search, and how overwhelming it must feel. You know, like, the first therapist that you see, it might be a match, but it might not be, like, a hit it out of the park match, and that's okay. I'm a firm believer in every therapist that you meet has something to teach you. And you have something to learn with everybody that you meet in life in general. So, not to say you should stick with a therapist that isn't right for you. But if you know, like, we're a match, but we're not, like, you know, a total match. Like, I can't see myself being friends with this person outside of therapy. That's totally okay. Because that's, that's part of it. Just as long as, like, Justin and Chris are, Kristen, oh my God, I miss her. Maybe that's why she came up in my head. Like Justin and Jess are saying, she ditches us twice in a row. I lost my train of thought. Like, just making sure that they could see you and they could treat you and they have expertise in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I will 100% cut out the part where you mentioned the other Kristen's. I'm kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
She misses her.
She won't
her.
Listen to it.
No, so she won't.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. She'll never know you missed her.
Can you imagine?
Never know. But my mind does jump to, like, you're doing your best. You're asking your questions. What are people going to experience from either one of you if they have a first session with you? I feel like I get asked that all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell am I walking into? What do you guys do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the setting. So in private practice, I operate so differently. So I actually send any potential client a really lengthy questionnaire, and either they hate it or they love it. It's usually one way or the other. It's everything, like medications you've ever taken, like just like an intake form, basically.
Yeah.
And I read it a couple of weeks before the session, if possible, or at least a week before. I let it marinate, so I know exactly, like, where to go with the session. But I don't like to spend personally the intake asking questions that could be provided on a questionnaire. I just don't like spending the time that way. I'd rather spend the time really digging deep into, let's create a blueprint for therapy. Let's really figure out the things that you want to change or things you want to lean into more. I really want to know what makes you tick, what makes you excited, like all those things, if possible. I know it's only an hour intake session. But the first session really is a get to know you, and let's come up with a plan for therapy. Mm-hmm. What are we working towards? Like, what are we, where's the goalpost? It's very collaborative, and, I actually share my screen with my clients a lot of times and say, is this good? What do you think about this? Like, let's collaborate on treatment goals and stuff. And then I always send them a secure message after with, like, things to focus on. But it really is, like, more structured on my end than theirs, I guess. But a lot of times clients will give me feedback and say, oh, that was a lot more of a relief than I thought. Or it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Or I thought I was going to just get psychoanalyzed for, like, 60 minutes. And it's like, no, I want to know you as a human. And I want you to get to know me too, just so that you feel comfortable. So for me, it's kind of like an extension of the consultation call, but with more depth. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. I love that you brought up, it will depend on the setting. Cause like, I was even thinking like, I'm not even going to get into what like a first session looks like in the hospital with me. Cause that's like totally different. But like for me working in a hospital system, like I don't have the privilege of contacting my clients ahead of time. So first it's boring paperwork. That's what I always say to my like teens. I'm like, first we have to go over boring paperwork. If they're under 16, the parent has to be there. So we go over like informed consent, all that kind of stuff. And then it's that biopsychosocial that Justin mentioned. So, you know, gathering some basic background information. Now, if they are like, I do have the luxury of all of my clients I see are referred by physicians I work with. So I can gather some data ahead of time, like some of that background, like who they live with, what school, assuming that it's up to date. And I try to do that and I'll be like, so it looks like from your record review, you go here, things like that, you know, why they're coming to therapy. Goals is always how I like spend the last part of the session. What goals do you have for yourself? What do you want to work on? I try, depending on how much time, and that's the other thing I was going to bring up earlier, Justin, when you first mentioned this, but we can talk about it now. Sometimes the intake can take a couple sessions because you're still getting to know one another. But yeah, gathering a lot of background information, symptoms, previous treatment history. I've always asked my clients, what is your previous experience in therapy? And if they've had therapy before, what worked well? What didn't work well? I still remember... This was years and years ago. I had this client that was like, I hate CBT. Don't tell me to challenge my thought. And this is when I was still like super like CBT. And she goes, but I love mindfulness. And at this point, I was like, leaves on the stream, grad school like traumatized me. I don't want to do more leaves on the stream. But it ended up, you know, working out. So like what, you know, their past experiences have been, what they're trying to get out of it. And then I always end my sessions with, would you like to schedule another session? And that's how I, to this day, still end every session, to give them an out if they feel like we're not a good fit. And I'll go over like, hey, if at any point, whether it be today or a couple sessions in, you feel like we're not a good match, I'm not meeting your needs, I'm happy to refer you to someone else. But yeah, it's a lot of background information gathering. And then I try to also leave time for those questions. Like, do you have any questions for me? I say nothing's off limits, except like, I'm not going to give you like my credit card number, my social security number, my home address, like those types of things. But yeah, it's really about getting to know the client. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I'm also in private practice. So a lot of what K-10 said, I totally overlap. A huge form, they fill out on their own. And then some areas I want to expand. I do want to have a conversation. I want to hear about your cultural background. I want to hear about your family of origin. Tell me about your siblings. Who do you think you're closest to in your family? The reason that all matters to me is a lot of the roadmap I'm going to use is interpersonal process. Mm-hmm. So I care a great deal about not only the culture you come from, the lens you see the world through, but who you connect with and why, and who you don't connect with. But that's a lot of the roadmap I'm using to help people with a lot of different things, anxiety, depression, trauma. Certainly, and maybe you'll agree or disagree with this, I don't think there's any one theoretical orientation that works for all difficulties. I just don't really believe it. And maybe there's some that work across a lot more than others, but I think what we know in our data is most therapists pull from a few different orientations. They identify as eclectic. There's not many purists out there who are like, I'm psychodynamic and that's it. I'm not going to ask you, but
I tried so hard to be psychodynamic solely, and I just couldn't do it for me. I wanted to so bad. But I just felt DBT just like creeping up my shoulder, like, you need skills. You need some skills.
Saying the word cyclical maladaptive pattern just doesn't roll off my tongue.
It doesn't feel right. Like, yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah.
But I agree. Like, we expand on certain areas that are more important in the roadmaps and the lens that we can best help you through. And that's the thing. I also like, I believe in this research that there's certain specificity questions. This is some research by John Norcross that can really help in creating a more adaptable therapeutic environment. Questions like, How do you feel about in-between session work or homework? Mm-hmm. The reason why is we know clients tend to have a strong preference either way.
Yep.
Meaning people tend to be like, give it to me. Tell me what to do. What should I be doing? Or don't you dare. Mm-hmm. But like these types of questions to set a table of like, you know, how much do you want feedback? How much do you want us just to explore and process mm-hmm. these sort of like tone setting things? I really enjoy exploring that. But I also agree with Jess that there's no better data than your previous therapy experience for good or bad. And it's not to say that I think if you had a great therapist, I don't believe I can be that person, mm-hmm. but at least I can understand what's worked for you.
Oh, yeah.
And that is invaluable to collect.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay if you had a really good therapeutic experience that you could talk to your therapist about that. Like you should, like, absolutely. Let's hype them up that they were a great therapist. Like that's incredible. And like, let's use that as a foundation to bounce off of, you know, let's not start all the way over depending on mm-hmm. what the presenting concern is. But Justin, you bring up a lot about tone, which I love because my other colleagues, they make fun of me a lot because I'm always checking in every 3 months with my clients. How's therapy going? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? What's hitting? What's not? You have to provide me with an answer, please. And I'm not make my clients, but I'll say like, I'll strongly encourage if something's not sitting well, I would love for you to tell me because I can't read your mind. I just can't,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what's going on in your mind if you don't tell me. And I've had some clients like, oh, I want you to message me after session so I don't forget certain things, or, you know, I want to be able to be there and just explore and process and not have to worry so much about what I should do in between sessions, but I want stuff to do in between sessions and I don't want to forget. Right. So, when people give me that feedback, it's not that I'm not a good therapist. It's that for this client, this would be helpful. And that's mm-hmm. it, you know? So I think that it's important just as an eclectic psychologist that like you can look at every single client and say, okay, I could be rigid with DBT or I could be rigid in this certain approach. And that might not actually be helpful for that client, but it might be for another client, mm-hmm. but not this one. So I have to adapt.
Yeah. A thought that came to mind after like reflecting on everything that we were talking about, just kind of the first session being that information gathering, things like that. Going back to like, this isn't a misconception, but maybe expectations of therapy. Like mm-hmm. I have been in situations where a lot of people are like, wait, like we don't just like dive in the first day. Like we don't, like you're not leaving with skills. And like now there's sometimes very rarely, and this is more in the hospital setting, actually in the hospital setting, I do this a lot more, but like maybe we do leave with a goal until our next session or like a skill or something. But that first session, and I would argue even the first couple sessions are really about us as the therapist getting to know our client, the client getting to know us in a therapeutic sense to see if it's a good fit. Mm-hmm. Now that doesn't mean you're spending three sessions not doing any like skill building, any like vulnerable opening up and things like that. But I did want to highlight that because I think a lot of people go in and leave session like, well, we just like talked about me. Like, is that what therapy is? And I mean, it is. We're talking about you. But like, typically, if you're going to a skill-based therapist, you're going to get into the skills in the further on sessions. I don't know if you all have a different perspective on that.
Yeah, I think it depends on the client. I will sometimes give like a skill as like an experiment after the first mm-hmm. session. I'll say, try this out. See how it settles. See how it lands. If it doesn't, no big deal. Just want to kind of get the ball rolling because I tell my clients this isn't forever. You know, the expectations, mm-hmm. therapy's not forever. And this is expensive. You know, yeah. This is expensive work. And it's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of emotions. So we want to get you going pretty quickly. And I tend to take that approach. Not every client likes that. So, if they don't like that, then I'll say, okay, we could take it more slow, like a little more slower. But, I like to give people a little more, substance in the first session only because I've gotten that feedback before of like, I just talked about me the whole time. And I'm like, that's part of it. You know, that's the beauty of it. That is the magic. You know what I mean? But for some clients, they're very structured. Like, what do I do now? You know, so for those mm-hmm. clients, I will give a skill. But it is rare after the first session that I do. It's usually the second, mm-hmm. maybe third. Justin, what about you?
Yeah, of course, the boring answer is it depends, but it's true because like not everybody's coming to therapy because they want skills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can assume as a therapist that someone wants skills, but that might not be it.
Yeah.
they might want to do their own processing. They might want to do their own emotional release. Like, it might not be, hey, do this, you know, between now and next time. And some people, yes, absolutely want and need that. I think to Jess's point, the reason why you might be waiting is it sort of feels like you're throwing a dart in the dark, like at some board that may or may not be out there when you don't know key factors about somebody. Yeah. And there is some risk. For example, I freaking love mindfulness. I think you can look at the research. It's highly effective. It helps with many different things. However, there are some research that shows if someone is struggling in the midst of their trauma, it might be activating and counterintuitive.
Yes.
It's not to say you shouldn't give a client sort of a mindfulness intervention session one, but a lot of things we do, we're kind of adapting on the fly. And the more you're just intervention, skill off the jump, I think you run the risk of throwing some darts in places that might not land well.
It's true.
And at some point that is going to happen. I'm definitely not one of those therapists that believe everything's preventable. No, I don't believe that at all. But if you're asking, why do we spend so much time understanding your narrative, your culture, your family of origin? That is why.
Yeah.
Because research can only describe generalities so far. It can't describe you as a unique human being.
100%. That was beautifully said, actually. And I think, like, if there's any new therapists who are tuning in, I know that there's like this tendency, because we talked about in the beginning, like to just find the skills and know them and like hold them so tight. The first session, you might not have to worry about that, you know? So showing up with less anxiety about that and all that would be great. I know it's hard when you're a green therapist and you're new and you're like, I want to provide value. You existing in this therapy space with this person is also providing a ton of value, a ton. Just creating space for someone to feel seen and heard and validated, on top of knowing that you might be a safe person for them that they could be raw with. That's incredible modeling for potential relationships they might have on the outside. Like, there's just so much there that you might not need skills for in the first or second session too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and you just saying that, especially to like new therapists and feeling anxious. Like, I don't know about you all. And I know we talked about like clients being anxious for a session, even though I've been doing this for years, like I still get nervous. Like first, not nearly like I was like in graduate school.
Yeah.
Like it is, even though like we all just kind of talk through, this is what a first session is like with me. We kind of have our, you know, roadmap to use your term, but it's still a unique individual. You don't know what people are going to come in. Like, I don't know about you all, but I've definitely had people come in and just like, I thought the referral question was one thing. They come in for, and granted,
yes,
I don't have the luxury of all the paperwork before, or something just happened that day. So we're trying to get through a psychosocial, but like something big just came up and they want to talk about it. Or like you were saying, Justin, throwing darts. Like, I think I'm going to go this way and then it pivots. And I'm like, oh, maybe we actually need to focus on that. So all of that to say, your therapists are nervous too. I don't know. You might, you all might not be nervous. I'm nervous too. And we also know that you're going to be nervous, and that's okay. Like, you don't have to apologize for being nervous. I don't know how many of my patients have been like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just don't know what to say. Or I'm sorry. I'm a little nervous. I'm like, you don't have to apologize. Like, this is awkward. It is so awkward.
It's like meeting a friend for the first time, trying to break the ice, you know, and as a client, you're not in the driver's seat. So it feels even more vulnerable. You're like, how do I, what do I say? You know, it's tough.
Yeah, it is true though. And I know we got a question on that of like, what do you all do as therapists? Like, what are you doing to prepare? And stuff? For me, like in my calendar, it's a special note when I was like first session, biopsychosocial. Yep. I'm going through every detail of everything you wrote from the first time you filled out the first thing on my website to all the intake paperwork. I'm going line by line, like, because I'm collecting info, but it is a rush. Even as someone like me who's very extroverted, like it, because it's so unknown.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, I can have this information. Maybe I did hop on a quick consult call with you. It still feels like, again, a big exploration, and us two strangers meeting and me wanting to learn all these things about you and to help you in literally any way I can. I feel the pressure, and I'll always feel the pressure. Even if I'm doing this at 85 years old, I feel the pressure of, I am literally going to do everything in my expertise and power to help you move along. The one thing I don't, and this is maybe on expectation and everything else, is I think eliminating symptoms isn't reality for most things. And I think that's important to internalize, meaning I think the reality of the 10 plus years I've been doing this now is bringing symptoms down to a manageable level is much more reality, where they're not in the driver's seat controlling your life. But I'm going to do everything in my power. If we eliminate them all down to zero, I'm going to do everything I can. But some of that is just expectations and the privilege I feel in this role getting to help you.
Totally.
What about you, K-10?
You know, I get super anxious before first sessions. I do. I still do. I've been doing this a while. I feel like, and I think in terms of skills, I know that I'm a really good therapist. I do. And I still get so anxious for first sessions because it's a lot for somebody, you know? And I think there's a lot riding on it too. And depending on that person's lived experiences, their past experiences, all that stuff, it's a nerve-wracking experience mostly. But I think the anxiety for me comes from, I hope that I can help them, not I don't think I can. I think it's just that hope. Like, I really want them to get better, like genuinely, you know what I mean? So whatever that means for the client, it might be, you know, symptom reduction. It might be, I want to enhance this part of my life. I want to do this or that. But I used to really struggle meeting my personal personality and my professional personality. And on internship, I really think I molded that really well. So now I could show up in sessions and feel less anxious because I wasn't aligned. So as you go through your therapy journey as a therapist over the years, I think you find your flow over time. So I feel less anxious about the things that I used to be anxious about. Like, oh, what if they derail the conversation and talk about something that I wasn't expecting? Or what if they talk about suicide? Oh my goodness, what do I do? You know, all those things don't bother me anymore. Now I'm like, okay, we have a 45 or 50 minute session. I really want to provide value. Like that's kind of where it comes from now. So I think it changes over time too. But the first session, I really do think a lot about what Justin said of like, how do I get to know this person as deeply as I possibly can before I meet them? So I'm able to see them, you know? And then I kind of think in the back of my mind, what approach might be helpful? And then what questions do I ask? And in the intake, I do ask like, you know, do you like structure or do you hate it? Like if you had to pick, if you had to pick, we're just kind of doing experiments here. And then we'll experiment with a little bit in the first session too, of like, if it was structured like this and we did have an agenda, how's that feel? Does that feel good and aligned or not? So a lot of it is kind of doing experimentations too. But in my mind, I try to think ahead, like what do I think this client might want? But it's hard. You'll never really know until you meet them. So.
Right.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. I really don't have anything else to add other than like the only difference with regard to like preparing for the session, since I don't have as much information, like I will go through like medical records, but a lot of times that doesn't give me as much information. So, I think honestly, now I'm thinking about my anxiety. I'm more anxious meeting people in the hospital than I am outpatient because I have even less time to prepare. Cause it's well, because I mean, like today, for example, I get a text at, or not text, it's our paging system, but it's on our cell phone, at like 10:30. Hey, new consult for you. Here's a very brief blurb. And then I went to, you know, my office, reviewed the notes from this admission, and then I go in. So I'm maybe.
Oh boy.
Yeah, maybe
you're just like getting after it. Like
I picture Jess throwing on the superwoman, superman cape.
Yeah.
And it's just because that's like the hospital versus outpatient. I can spend more time. Still, I don't have that like big packet. So I think it's, but all of that to say, hopefully all therapists are doing prep work ahead of time. Yeah. To kind of get to know, the client and prepare for therapy so that we can do exactly what you all said, like figure out how to help this person the best way we can, assuming that we are a good fit and we can meet their needs. I was going to say, I'm going to meet your needs with research, which sounded weird.
Please meet my needs with some science and research.
We're yearning for research.
So I'm not going to lie. Like, I had no idea where to go for research on this. Like, because like it just, I was like starting therapy for the first time, like outcomes, like trying to whatever. And like, you know, I always try to find like new articles. And so shout out to my husband, because I was like, this is what we're going to talk about this week. Give me some like topics that my brain won't think about, because you're not
smart,
a psychologist. And he was like, well, maybe like, why wouldn't people seek therapy? And I was like, oh, like what? Like things like that. So,
all right.
I found an article. So the question I'm going to pose to you, what barriers do you believe prevent men from seeking out therapy?
It's all you, Justin.
You man.
You're all about men's mental health. So I figured you would know more than me.
I know. Well, the irony, and I don't know how you encapsulate this in the research, but the patriarchy hurts men and holds men back. And again, the existence and ongoing ways toxic masculinity exists. How do you encapsulate that and categorize that in a research study? It would be interesting. But those are the first things that come to mind.
Yeah. To echo what he said. Yeah. 100%. I think it's probably, I don't know how to say this, but I think men are socialized, I guess to Justin's point. Yeah. Men are socialized to maybe not talk about emotions or bring them into the room, and it might feel weird for them depending on where you come from. And
So I chose this article thinking about like things we already talked about. People are already anxious, and then, you know, men in particular, and we know men do not seek out therapy as much as women. So this was a systematic review of 45 articles examining the main challenges preventing men from seeking therapy. It's a 2023 article. So they looked at three main themes that came out of all the articles. They kind of overlap, but I'll highlight the three main themes. So first was the masculine identity. So basically men's image of themselves created barriers to help seeking in times of mental distress. So this could be like self-reliance. I can do this all on my own, being stoic, isolating or using more destructive behaviors rather than seeking out therapy, like going to the bar to drink with my buddies rather than seeking out therapy, or fear or shame if they decided to actually go to therapy. The next theme that emerged were male attitudes and behaviors. So this was the way men regarded themselves in relation to their help-seeking efforts, as well as the lack of understanding many men have when attempting to cope with their mental distress. So sub-themes that came out of this, how males are socialized, exactly what you all said, poor mental health literacy, being unaware of internal emotional responses, and then perceiving help-seeking as feminine.
Wow.
And then the last one was actually psychological services and therapists, and talked about the scarcity of support worldwide for masculinity and men seeking out therapy, such as like there's not a lot of health promotion about men's mental health, economic barriers, like perceived feminization of counseling and therapy. A lot of people don't promote like, hey, I work with men in particular. Yeah. So, you know, even if they did want to seek out, kind of where do I start and how do I find someone that understands the male perspective? Thoughts? Wow.
It's like, I'm not surprised, but I wish I was that way. Like, I'm like, oh, I wish, you know, it was different. But I could totally see those barriers and how they could stop somebody, you know, from seeking out therapy. I do wonder too, if there's like, I know this probably wasn't covered in the research, but I do wonder if there's a group, just say you're a man and you have a group of your buddies and maybe one is going to therapy. I wonder if that's kind of a protective factor, or maybe a factor that would enhance like their ability to like maybe seek out therapy. I don't know. I just always think about how we can access that population better, because we could do better, I think, as a field with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar reactions. I know my mind expands of like, how do we meet people where they're at? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been riding this style of psychotherapy for so long now. And it is interesting to think about whether it's thinking about men or people of different cultures, how this traditional sit across from each other style of, you know, get to know you, but really talk about you and not really do anything else, but sit across from each other and talk. Yeah. It's like, we're so used to it, but it is a very specific style. Mm-hmm. And does even that push people away versus these ideas of wilderness therapy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
In true form, not these mock wilderness therapy that they say they are, but it's all BS.
Yeah.
You do, you build, you're vulnerable. Like it's a whole process of doing and sharing at the same time, which is certainly, there's not a lot of doing in traditional psychotherapy. You just sit there.
Just like,
there is, I don't know if you all have heard of it. And like, this is me honestly just saying the name because I haven't explored it a lot. Man Therapy. Like it's literally a brand called mantherapy.org. And it's like about men's mental health. I pulled it up. Whoa. So it's Man Therapy. It's okay to cry even when it's not about sports. Get a rundown of how you excel and where you can improve your mental health. But it's very like a masculine approach to therapy. Anyways.
Yeah.
So there's that resource. And the other thought I just had as we were talking about this, I wasn't surprised by the results either. But thinking about our field, it was all men that started it. And now granted, and the clients were women. Like you think of Freud and hysteria and all of that kind of stuff. But it's so interesting how, like, if we think about, like, okay, who are the psychologists, the founding fathers of psychology? All men, minus maybe the daughters of men's male psychologists. Right. And it's become such a, like, feminist or feminized, not feminist. I don't know. Area theme. And it's just so interesting that from a field that was created from men, that more men, I don't know. And Justin, you might be able to speak on that being a man in the field, but it is a female dominated field now, both from therapist and client. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting.
I think it just goes to show any field progresses with diversity. I think any field is limited if it stays in its rigid place it started from.
That was such a beautiful statement, Justin. How sweet.
Every now and then.
Yeah.
No one knows where it comes from.
I'm just going to hold on to that for the rest of our friendship because that was very, very sweet.
That one beautiful statement you made.
That one beautiful statement. And
that's it.
Know what else is beautiful?
But yeah, no, yes, the polls.
The polls. So thank you all for chatting so I could pull up the polls as always when I have to do these things back to back. So I did the polls this week and I tried to promote some therapy related books on them. So I hope that was helpful to people. So the first question I asked, have you ever been in therapy? The options were yes or no. What percentage of our group members do you all think have been in therapy at some point in their life?
60. I have my hopes high.
Wait, it's going to be like 93.
You think? Okay.
Yeah.
Jess, hit us.
95%.
Dang.
Yep. 95% God have been in therapy. Yep.
I kind of wish it was lower because I think we would help more people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I think we have such a select, intelligent, nuanced. We just got to figure out how to reach all those other.
I know.
And keep all these incredible people.
Incredible humans.
We love you.
Yeah. Next one was a fill in the blank. The first time I went to therapy, I want to note that the first response that comes up is Justin's. That says whatever the fudge I want.
I had forgotten I wrote that. I was feeling extra spicy.
Oh my God.
The first one that came up. Anxious, terrified, fearful, awkward, nervous, intimidated, so seen and heard. Terrified, nervous, scared, anxious, nervous, scared, apprehensive, anxious, terrified, ashamed, like a burden, nervous, super anxious, scared. So going, I mean, we started with this. I know we've got a bunch of questions about this, about like, does everybody feel anxious? Overwhelmingly, so many people do. Panic, worried, heard. Really, really anxious. Oh, this person was weirdly calm. And that's what they said. I did not add weirdly. like that's what they said. Weird. We got a couple of weirds. Self-conscious. Stress out. Uncomfortable. Uncertain. So we have a lot of herds. We have a few unherds. Vulnerable. Scared.
So yeah, I think overall, just looking at all of the, and we got a ton of responses. I'm like still scrolling.
Oh my God.
The general consensus is it's going to feel awkward and anxiety provoking at first.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I asked, how did you find your first therapist? And the options I gave were insurance, recommendation from someone, online search / social media, or my employer's school. And then I also did a question box for other. So first we'll do the poll and then I'll see what the other answers are. So insurance, recommendation from someone, online search or social media, and my employer. Which one do you think is the highest?
I'm lost on this one. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't.
Nothing would surprise me.
So it was actually like all pretty close. So the highest one was online search or social media at 38%. Recommendation from someone, 29. My employer, school, 20. Insurance, 13. And then let's see.
Close.
Not bad.
From the, oh, maybe not. If I can figure out how to pull up the other ones on this. No. Oh, here we go. So a lot of people are saying parents. So I guess when I was doing it, I was considering that as like recommendation from someone, but maybe if you were a minor and your parents found it, it's not so much a recommendation. Military benefits, PCP recommendation. So a lot of referrals from primary care, a billion phone calls.
Yeah.
I guess we didn't touch on that. Like sometimes you do have to call and email a bunch of people. Psychology Today, specifics like Cancer Treatment Center, VA, psychiatrist. Yeah. So most of them were parents or doctor. So yeah. And those were the polls.
Love it.
Well, these are the group member questions. And that was the worst transition we've ever had, but we're so glad you asked your great questions. They're always interesting. You know, y'all think of some thoughtful, nuanced questions. Obviously, there's some things we have to answer more broadly, but we do appreciate you sharing, asking. C from California. California love. When you hear a state, do you have a song that immediately comes to mind? Because when I hear California, it's immediately Tupac, Snoop, or Dre.
That's where my mind goes.
I think Hotel California when I hear California.
You would. The Eagles. Yeah. You would.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Why do I feel like that's on brand? Wow.
I mean, it depends on the song or the state. Yeah. Like if I, like if I say Maine, what freaking song are you going to think of?
When I say West Virginia, what do you guys think of?
Country Roads Take Me Home.
That's what I'm talking about,
yes. 100%. Oh, okay. That was, yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Tennessee Wagon Wheel. Anybody? No.
I think of Tennessee Whiskey. Wait,
Wagon
actually.
Wheel is from Tennessee?
No, because it just said, like, in it, it says Johnson City, Tennessee. We're getting so off topic.
Sorry. Yep. Yeah.
But it's just a phenomenon.
It is.
I think when I think of a state, I usually think of a song, but we'll have to categorize
North Dakota.
This
what song do you think of from North Dakota? You didn't even know it was a state. Wasn't that?
No, I'm not.
You know how people have like the cities and states like memorized? Justin's going to have a song for every state memorized for the next time.
Yeah,
we
yeah. Must have assigned.
Oh my God.
I'm totally going to sign.
Anyways.
See, we appreciate the question, but basically saying I've been in therapy for like 4 months now. I'm still holding on to a lot of shame and embarrassment surrounding some of my mental health challenges. Does this get easier over time? And do you have any suggestions for how I can bring this up in therapy?
See, that's a good one because I think it's something that a lot of people struggle with. Like I'm in therapy. I'm here to be seen. I'm here to talk about the vulnerable things. And yet I'm still holding back. And like, what is that about? And how do I go about that? And I think it's really difficult. And it's, again, it depends, typical psychologist answer. But my thought is there's got to be something to be said about the fact that you're identifying this, which is great. You know, the insight is there. You're like, hey, there's a lot of shame around this. I sometimes encourage people to just say it. like, hey, I was singing this week and I have a lot of like weird thoughts in my mind and I really want to share them with you. And I'm just hoping that you see and hear me. And sometimes just saying it to your therapist could be helpful if you trust them. I know 4 months is not a long time to know somebody, so it's probably hard to assess. But kind of like Justin, what they were saying before is like, you could get really good data if you just ask, if you just say, hey, I'm really struggling with this one thing, like, and I'm kind of feeling weird about bringing it up, and maybe your therapist and you could talk around it before you talk about it. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I think that's usually an easy approach for most therapists, but those are my initial thoughts.
I was going to say the same thing, K10, about talking around it versus like about the thing, because that's what I usually encourage people, like, hey, there's something I want to talk about, but I feel really embarrassed about it. And then how that your therapist responds to that, be like, okay, what is making you feel embarrassed? Like, are, cause when I've had those conversations that like me, I put it on me as a therapist. Have I had reactions in the past that make you feel like this is not something you can open up about? Another thing I encourage a lot of people to do is if talking about something is too difficult, but writing it down is easier. Like, I work primarily with teens. I'll be like, write in your notes app in your phone and bring it to me and just hand me your phone. And then after I read it, I will say, like, is this something you want to talk about right now? And sometimes they're like, yes, and I need you to start it. Sometimes they're like, no, but now you know, so that we can talk about it in a future session. So that might be another way to bring it up too. Or maybe you do a combination, like, hey, there's something I'm really anxious to talk to you about because I feel shame and embarrassment, but I don't know how to say it. How would you feel about me writing it down?
So good. Olivia, right next door in Florida. How do I feel more comfortable answering questions? Yo, I saw this and I was like, I know this is going to resonate with a lot of people, but they say, all I say is, I don't know. And we have a lot of awkward, silent pauses.
Maybe the goal isn't to get more comfortable with answering questions, but to get curious about changing your approach to answering. You know, and that could literally be saying, instead of saying like, I don't know, you might replace it with, I'm lost right now. Let me think about it. I'm making this up, right? It depends on each client. But I think with pausing, I don't know about either of you, but in my grad school, they said, you know, silence could be good. It could be therapeutic. When you're on the other end of silence, it feels so awkward. You know, like when you're the client and you're just like kind of waiting, you're like, oh, what do I say next? You know, but there might be a reason why. You know, it's hard to disclose more. Maybe the questions themselves are uncomfortable. I mean, there could be so many things, but I think a good first step might be thinking about, what about this makes me feel uncomfortable? You know, what about this question? If you could reflect on other therapy sessions you've had. I do remember my therapist asking me that question. Why did I feel uncomfortable about that? You know, what about that made me feel weird? And then you get more data going through, but I do think it's uncomfortable to answer questions when you don't really know the answer to. I mean, that could be hard.
Yeah. No, K10, you're reading my mind on so many things tonight. But this question made me think of a client I had that, granted, we had rapport to get to this place, but I like set a rule in therapy, like, you can't respond, I don't know, because that was this client's kind of avoidance tactic. And I'm not saying, Olivia, that's exactly what you're doing, but it was very helpful for us because in some ways, pulling out a DBT skill of opposite action here, the client had to engage in opposite action. Like, and would actually say, like, what I want to say right now is, I don't know. And then we would be able to be like, okay, do you actually not know? Or are you scared to answer? I also think, and I think, Olivia, some of this is on your therapist as well. Like, if I have a client that I can tell is like uncomfortable, maybe saying, I don't know how to answer that, shutting down, I think it's also on your therapist to be like, hey, I've noticed this pattern of when I ask questions about X, Y, or Z, you tend to say, I don't know. Can we explore why it's uncomfortable for you? Could I reword my questions? Because I tried to do that a lot as a therapist. Like, hey, let me try to ask this in a different way to see if it's easier for you to, like, answer. But yeah, reflecting exactly like K10 said of, like, why is this uncomfortable for me to answer? And it could just be, like, it's a topic I'm uncomfortable about. It could be, actually, I'm scared my therapist is going to judge me. And that will give you more data than just being, like, I don't know.
Yo, I so agree. And just to normalize, it's not saying this is for you, Olivia, but that is such a common anxious stress mm-hmm. response. And again, for some people that can come from places, family dynamics, being put and pressured to have to know, but the exploration of that is really important in the nuance of that. But again, it might not be for you, but for a lot of people, that's just a common I'm anxious response. It's just to say, mm-hmm. I don't know. And again, a lot of nuance to explore behind that, but it is common. So that's why I appreciate you asking the question, because feeling uncomfortable or feeling like you must know right away, like this is a common dynamic that plays out often in therapy, that sometimes you got to sink into the space and explore a little bit. Renee from good old Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, let's go. Gosh, I heard Renee yell.
Okay, Justin, I need to know, what song do you think of when you think of Ohio, though?
Yeah.
Do you think of like
Cleveland Rocks?
What?
Cleveland Rocks, Cleveland Rocks, Cleveland Rocks. Oh, yeah. If you know the song, you know. It's a Drew Carey theme song. But that's what I think of. And I also think of Kid Cudi. If you know Kid Cudi, you know right away.
Okay.
Cudi has many great songs, but it's got some good Cleveland liners in there. But Renee asked, and I really also very one I think a lot of people can relate to, how to find a therapist that will actually challenge you. Most of the therapists I've ever had give insightful or helpful information. It feels just like venting. Don't ever feel relief or help from sessions. Renee, I'll jump in first on this one. This isn't to put it on you, because I don't think it's on mm-hmm. you, but this is pointing out why it's valuable for therapists to check in mm-hmm. of how therapy is going for you.
Yep.
And to give you and to kind of empower you that whatever it is you're wanting, you can ask for. Mm-hmm. And a good therapist will tell you whether they can meet you in that space or not. I'm reading exactly what you wrote there, and I'd be like, I would love it if your next therapist, you just go, I don't feel challenged mm-hmm. or I don't feel like I have like actionable steps forward. A good therapist would be like, here are 3 actionable steps before next week. Let's explore these. I don't think that's something that, again, maybe some therapists would feel sort of uncomfortable with, but I think some people want that direct, solution-focused, actionable steps out of therapy. There's nothing wrong with wanting it, and I would encourage you to articulate that. Mm-hmm. And your therapist should be checking in.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier with the, you know, 15-minute consultation or first intake session, you know, if your therapist doesn't ask about previous experiences in therapy, like bring it up and be like, hey, I have seen X amount of therapists in the past. I really didn't feel like I was being challenged. That is something I want out of therapy. And then hopefully the therapist will explore what that will look like, because what challenging looks like could look different for different people. So for you, just based off of the couple sentences you wrote, like you don't want somebody that's just going to sit and hear you vent. It sounds like you probably want skills, or maybe venting is the therapist then kind of doing the reflections, validating, but you want somebody to be like, okay, I hear what you're saying. However, have you thought of it from this perspective? So if you know what challenging looks like for you, I would bring that to the table, mm-hmm. like first session or within that, you know, 10, 15 minute consultation call, in addition to everything Justin said, like the therapist should be checking in and all of those things.
I love all of those. I agree with everything y'all said. I even think this might be, I don't know how y'all feel about this, but sometimes I think when we're a client in therapy, and I'm speaking from my own personal experience, when I was new in therapy as a client, I was so anxious that I felt like I had to fill the space with stuff mm-hmm. and talk the entire time. Like, 'cause I just didn't know. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't, my first therapist, mixed bag. But there was no structure, so I didn't know when to stop talking or when to let him talk. Like, I just felt like I didn't know the flow. So that is kind of on your therapist to direct you in some way. And I think sometimes when we take a step back and we let our therapist show up for us, sometimes they will challenge us because they kind of see that as like an open door. But then again, it's up to the therapist, in my opinion, to challenge you and all of that. I've had a couple of clients say like, okay, I'm ready for level two of therapy. And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but okay. Like, what does that mean? And they're like, I'm going to be challenged more. And I'm like, oh, okay. So this is like a video game. Perfect. I see that, you know, and then we could kind of go from there. But, I do think checking in as a therapist is helpful, you know,
level up. Let's go to the next level. Jeez, K10, level up.
I feel like, what if we gave out like stickers or something and people put them on the back of the car, like level five therapy? I'd be like, no.
Can you imagine having a second degree black belt in therapy? Like, that would be so bad. Yeah.
We should give out belts that people wear. You see people with that third degree black therapy belt, and you're just like,
they are so emotionally regulated. Person, yeah, I want them in a crisis.
That person is regulated. Oh gosh, we'll think about it. We'll talk to APA about it. Maybe we'll get it out there. Nicole from Colorado. Whew. This is a cool question. Something we don't talk a lot about on this pod, and I don't know why. I've been going to individual therapy for 3 years, but I'm about to start couples therapy. What should I expect in a couple session that is different than individual session? Obviously, this could be an entire podcast episode, but if we were going to just give a few things to help old Nicole think about, what does couples therapy look like?
I don't work with couples, so that's on you, Justin, or Jess. Jess works with minors, so it's on you, Justin.
Well, I was about to say, my only experience is from being in couples therapy, which I don't mind like saying on the podcast. I mean, from my recollection of the first intake, it's not that much different from like an information gathering, but goals are obviously going to be related to you as a unit instead of individual. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say sometimes it comes out like, oh, like, for example, I still needed to work on my anxiety. We knew that. Everybody that listens to this podcast knows that. But like, I would say some of the biggest differences are like, one, since there's, if I'm assuming in a two partnered couple, two of you sitting there, so you're not going to get as much time talking because you're splitting the time. And then the goals are going to be related to the couple as a unit rather than individual goals. And I guess part of that could be like, if one partner has certain goals and the other partner has different goals, trying to figure out, you know, how to meet those goals. This wasn't my experience, but I've heard from some people that, like, you know, when you go to individual therapy, you have your kind of, I want to reduce my anxiety symptoms, reduce my depression symptoms, and you kind of have those clear outcomes. For some people, couples therapy is figuring out, can we actually meet those goals as a couple? Or do we need to separate as a couple? I don't know if that would be talked about necessarily in the first session, but I feel like that could be kind of a way it would be different, realizing maybe goals aren't realistic. But I don't know, Justin, from like a provider, because I don't do couples therapy with minors, so from like a provider's perspective, would you say there are any major differences?
Yeah, I think it's just important to hold that it's like it's about the unit. It's about the two of you together communicating, meaning, especially when I work with couples, if Justin is struggling with perfectionism, it's going to be about, how does that perfectionism impact this unit? How does it impact this communication, the relationship, when you feel close, when you feel pushed away, how you guys progress in your overall goal as a couple here, versus me, you know, me as a therapist now pivoting to Justin to be like, I'm digging into your perfectionism for 20 or 30 minutes to be like, where's this come from for you? That's individual therapy. Again, some couples therapists might do a little of that. For me, my mindset is, I'm getting the two of you to create a better connection together. And of course, that comes into communicating, being vulnerable, and connecting in the here and now. We are talking about and working on things in the here and now that's getting you two to communicate and hear each other differently. And so it's a lot less than me digging into Justin's trauma that is related to perfectionism that's saved for individual. So, but again, ask the questions, Everything you heard on this podcast still applies to finding an awesome couples therapist. Oh, we got time for one more. And it's from Maddie from that state up north, otherwise known as Michigan. We're glad you're from the Mitten State, even if there's some a little bit of Ohio-Michigan rivalry. But you asked the best question, Maddie. Not that we're putting a judgment on it, but it's really important. How do you know when you should start going to therapy? Oh, what a good note to end on.
If you have that thought, maybe think about going to therapy. You know, I mean, there's no problem that's too big or too small, in my opinion. But
we're on like the same wave.
I feel like there's something spiritual happening between us during this podcast. I feel like we're reading each other's mind without talking.
If you have that thought, because if you were saying to yourself, like, I wonder if I should go to therapy. Okay. You usually don't have that thought if there's nothing that you could work on in therapy. Like, I mean, yeah. And obviously there's so much nuance and the factors of accessibility and things like that. However, if you have the thought and you can identify things you want to work on, then it's time.
It's time. It's definitely time. We appreciate you all. And as K10 said, there's no problem too big or too small to get into some therapy. Ask your therapist some good questions, whether it's in a consult call, first sesh, second sesh, any sesh. You ask them, bestie. We got your back. Thank you for being here, as always. We love doing this pod. Always a enjoy connecting with you all. We hope you're enjoying it. Share with somebody, surprise them. You know, maybe you know that your cousin's about to go to a first session. Like, here you go, cuz. I got you. This is the podcast session. We're going to see you all next time on Welcome to Group Therapy. Even though we have no idea what we're going to talk about next week, sometimes you just are spontaneous. And the best episodes sometimes come out of last minute brainstorming, which we're going to do right now. See y'all.
Bye.